Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Wonner Podcast, the podcast where we break down and review films all in one big, long, unbroken take. I'm Austin Archer, and with me, as always, is my childhood next-door neighbor and lifelong best friend,
Kramer England.
We both should have said our names are Jimmy.
Jimmy.
I'm Jimmy, and with me is...
I'm Jimmy British.
Yeah. I'm Jimmy American, and...
Yeah, we should have those names. You got to have a Jimmy something.
Yeah, that's why I'm wearing this jacket.
Yes, looking good.
I'm being in the, this. I feel like I could be in, I don't have a blonde wig, but I would have worn a blonde wig if I.
That would have been good.
Yeah.
I wonder if my daughter, my daughters have a red wig for Ariel, but no blonde wigs.
What do you think you're going to be in the gang, Jimmy? So we are, this is our spoiler review of 28 Years Later, The Bone Temple. If you want to hear us talk non-spoiler stuff, you can go listen to our first thoughts episode that's on our channel right now. If you have not seen the movie yet, you don't want it spoiled. This is your warning. Stop watching the video. Go see it.
Go
watch our spoiler free video and then come watch this one.
Yes. And this is a movie that I noticed this too when you did your first thoughts. We both were like, oh, I can't talk about that. So we'll talk about it in the spoiler edition. Because there's like, you can't talk about this movie much without spoiling something like immediately. So I'm glad we get to spoil this movie because there's a lot to talk about.
Yeah,
we really want to get it. I really want to get into.
Yeah, I mean, we pick up like right where basically we left off, which was a surprise to me. I will say this. I'm going to need to go back and watch 28 Years Later because I haven't rewatched it since the theater.
Me too.
And I could have sworn we saw like pretty definitive evidence that Ralph Fiennes was killed by Samson at the end of the first film. But the way I remember it is that he's like grabbed and pulled out of
Yes, I remember. No. So he's like grabbed, but then Spike stabs him, I think, with one of those syringes.
Yeah.
And he's like, Spike, I think it's time you go home now. And then he leaves from what I remember. But now I need to I remember he wasn't killed, obviously, because he's in this movie.
Clearly. In my brain, I was I thought we saw him get killed. And so I thought when I saw Ralph Fiennes in the trailer for this one, I thought we were maybe going to go back and do some stuff. But it's a direct continuation from the previous film. I mean, it is you could play these back to back, and outside of the directorial aesthetic styles, you wouldn't really miss a beat.
No, it's basically he meets Jimmy. They seem to take him. So Spike meets Jimmy and the Jimmies. And then it seems like they just took him to this fun park, this water park. And they basically say, all right, if you kill one of us, you can live. If not, we're going to kill you. It's basically the only thing we missed is their travel from the spot to the water park.
Well, and it's such a I talked about in my spoiler-free thoughts that this is, in my opinion, the most brutal film in this franchise, violence-wise. And I think it's because it's that old zombie movie trope, which is the humans are always scarier than the monsters.
Yeah.
The humans in the post-apocalyptic landscape are always the scarier threat when you come across, roving bands of cannibal humans and things that. And the Jimmy gang is one of the scariest post-apocalyptic zombie movie human gangs I've ever seen in a film. And we were introduced to the threat of the Jimmy gang right away, because I, watching the film, when he said okay, the rules are fight to the death. And whoever wins, gets to, but I thought surely this is just sort of an intimidation tactic, or he's just trying to scare the new kid,
really.
I didn't expect because in my head I was thinking, well, there's no way Spike's going to win in a fight to the death with any of these kids. Like we end 28 years later, the previous film, showing how good the Jimmy gang is at fighting, the movie ends with them just dispatching a horde of infected with ease, making it look fun, making it look easy.
Yeah.
And so when Spike is surrounded by all these Jimmies and Jimmy says fight to the death, I was like, well, there's no way that Spike has a chance to win. So I thought this must be some kind of intimidation ritual, or like they fight him until he's just about to die. And they, I don't know, but I was surprised that like, nope, he means it. He's like,
oh yeah,
kill or be killed, you know?
Yeah. And I thought it was, I thought it was interesting because I did like, okay, this is really going to happen. I figured, well, Spike's not going to get killed because he's one of the main characters. But it did give you, it gave you a really good idea of their ethics.
Yeah.
Or not really ethics, but like Jimmy is like, and I thought it was interesting. Okay. He only wants seven. I thought that was the thing that was strange to me. Like, oh, why is he not trying to bring on more people? But this is really like, this is the thing about Jimmy. He's a cult leader. Like mm-hmm. he is doing things to make people subjective to him. Right. So, and they're all kids, all the Jimmys, even Jimmy, Sir Lord Jimmy Crystal, right?
Yeah.
Which is his full name. He's a kid. He's in a 30-year-old, you know, however old year old body.
Yeah, we got to imagine if he was like 10.
Yeah.
Know, so he's like, he's stuck in our age, 37, yeah. 35, 36, yeah. 37. But the other kids yet in the gang, they're not old enough to have existed before the apocalypse.
No. And so he's feeding their minds with Teletubbies, which I swear he called Teletummies.
He did call them Teletummies.
I thought that was a great little thing that they used, that like your mind forgets what the real name is. So if he was told like Teletubbies, like what are you talking? No, it's Teletummies.
Well, of course, it's 30 years ago.
Yeah,
and TV hasn't existed for 30 years. And it was the last show he was watching before the world fell apart. But it's like, you know, it's like if you told me about a TV show that I hadn't, like if the world ended when I was 10 and I was watching Rugrats or something, I'd be like, what was the name of that show with all the babies? But it's like, I still live in the world.
Babies.
I have Google and I can look it up, you know.
Yeah.
But I like that. I feel like that's a really good writing detail from Alex Garland that he
says
Teletummies.
I love it.
And it makes sense that in his brain, he's like, they have televisions on their tummies.
Tummies, yeah.
You know,
their tum-tum, which he said, which I love. So I loved, like, Jimmy is an extremely interesting character.
Yeah.
And he is stuck as a child. So he's telling all these kids these stories about the Teletummies who, you know, and he's completely manipulating them. But this thing, this ritual that he does at the beginning is to just basically let them know that they're, you know, they're going to fight for their lives. And he really manipulates them into relying on him completely, you know?
Well, and again, like the brutality of this film, like the goal, because like what happens is Spike, you know, this kid that is fighting Spike is sort of toying with him. And that's the only way that Spike gets a chance in the fight. And Spike, while the kid's not looking, while he's laughing and taunting him, picks up a knife and stabs him in the thigh.
Well, he pulls his pants down.
That's right. And but he severs his femoral artery.
Yeah.
And we don't know that when the knife's in his thigh, the guy is like, oh, you got me.
Yeah.
You know? And then when he pulls it out, and this is just, I mean, it's just like right off the bat, this movie's just like, oh God. Cause immediately you can just tell like, oh, he's dead.
Yeah.
Like that thing is going to, and I don't know that I've ever seen in a film someone bleed out in real time from a femoral artery and showing it like in real time and just watching how much it was. Again, this film is in my opinion of the franchise is the most like visceral and brutal, because a lot of the way that Danny Boyle stylizes the violence with the camera work is to turn it into this kind of shaky thing. And Nia DaCosta's approach to a lot of this violence is we see it in the clearest detail. Like this early on thing where Samson grabs the guy by the face and pulls his head off, which is a thing that we established in 28 years later that the alphas do. But we actually, like, Danny Boyle would show it kind of in this like shutter sort of distorted thing. But Nia DaCosta, like, it's an amazing practical effect. He puts his hand on this guy's face and just pulls his entire head out of spine and all out of his body. It's and gross. Like, and it is, I mean, it is brutal. Like this,
it's movie, hard to watch. Yeah.
Oh, there were several times where Olivia was just going like this next
I know.
To me, just like,
I had to be like, look away for a little bit and be like, but this when the kid pulls out the knife and it sprays, like, I mean, it's, and like you said, I've never seen anything where somebody bleeds out, but then even to make this even worse, Jimmy comes down and is like happy about all of it. And he's like, oh, are you feeling tired or are you feeling hungry? What are you feeling? You know? And he's like, he's playing with this other Jimmy. He's like talking to him, you know, as he's dying and bleeding out. And the other Jimmy's like, please. And he's like, well, there's nothing I can do. So again, it's kind of like all these Jimmys are in fear because they know that Jimmy won't do anything.
Yeah.
You know, Jimmy Crystal won't do anything to help them.
Yeah.
You know, he's basically, again, asserting his dominance. And then
they know the rules. Like the rules are. It's like you shouldn't have been messing around. Like you were goofing off and he got you. Mm-hmm. And you lose.
And it's just like it's kind of at this point as well, Spike, you can see how Spike is responding, which he's afraid of his life. He can't run away from these guys, especially being he's like 10, 12, you know, whatever he is.
Yeah.
He's not gonna run away from these guys, he's gonna be terrified. So you understand also in that moment, you understand where Jimmy is as a cult leader, and then you understand where Spike is as being terrified, and he's just looking for a way out, which was, it's like an amazing opening scene to set that tone.
Yeah, and there's all these little details too about the other Jimmys. Like the Jimmys all have like scars all over their faces and stuff.
And the upside down crosses on their heads.
Which is Jimmy's necklace that he got from his dad that he, you know, like, but it's never explained to us where their scars come from, there's sort of this implied world of like, you might have gotten that from each other. Like maybe you got that in your initiation fight. We don't know how long the other Jimmys have been with Jimmy Crystal, and we don't, we don't know how, like, I think that the implication that Jimmy's sort of been raising these young Jimmys could be that, or he could have picked them up from another community when they were like, 10, 11, 12, and they've been with him for long enough that their minds have been warped by his evil. Yeah. And it's like, we know where Spike comes from. We know that Spike comes from a community on an island that is relatively, we didn't get to fully learn about the sort of like cultish nature of this community because they had their own little rituals and stuff, but they were mostly like a strong community that looked out for each other. And that was, they're a community of survivors.
Yeah.
And so the Jimmy gang is like very jarring for Spike, but there's sort of this world of like, how long would it take for Spike to be going around with them before his brain would start being molded by, the influence of Jimmy and, because first movie is about growing up and heading out. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just being in that situation where you're just fighting to survive, it would be interesting to see how long it would take him, but this movie does only take place over a couple of days.
It's a much more focused story than the first one. I'm not that the first one's unfocused, I think the first one is a little bit more of a broad story. We sort of have to reestablish the world in the first in 28 years later because it's 30 years later. So we've got to sort of establish like Spike's colony and where he comes from. And this whole thing of like how they're connected to the mainland by this low tide causeway that you can walk across and that is obscured when the tide comes in. And that they're hunters, all this stuff. And we have to sort of reestablish the new rules of like the way that the infected have evolved. And we've got to sort of learn the new rules of like the alphas and the different kinds in 28 days later and 28 weeks later, there's only one kind of infected and they're just the runners, just the sprinters. And now in 28 years later, we've got all these different little evolutions of like what the virus has done to people over time. And so we've got to reestablish that. And we've got to learn the origins of Jimmy and stuff. And it's just a more kind of sprawling world to establish in the first one. And the second one's just, it's a much more focused thing. It's like, okay, you know who everybody is, you know the sort of new rules of the world. Right. And now it's just sort of like Spike's journey with the Jimmy group and this relationship between Ian and Samson. And that's the movie, and Spike's journey with the Jimmys is terrifying and upsetting and also I talked about this in my spoiler free thing. I wonder if you had a similar experience, like as brutal as this film is and as brutal as the Jimmys are, there's a lot of like fun in this movie.
Yeah.
Like my audience was laughing a lot. And I think appropriately, I think that the movie wants us to have, was your audience laughing?
Yeah, they were laughing. And I think it is, it's supposed to be funny. You have Ray Fiennes who's trying to, I mean, his whole relationship with Samson, I found very interesting.
Yeah.
But he's trying to bring Samson back. So he's doing, I mean, he's dancing with him. He's trying to teach him how to dance, you know, and like, it's really funny. And I think it's supposed to be really lighthearted.
We kind of find out that Samson's like, kind of, he likes the effects of the morphine.
Yeah. He's and like so addicted to the morphine.
He's coming back to Ian being like, and he also, we early on in the film, when Samson grabs this guy's face and rips his head out of his shoulders, we get a glimpse into Samson's brain, which is one of the, this is the first
never
time
seen
they've
this before.
This is a new element that they're introducing where we see that like from the perspective of an infected person, non-infected people look like the monsters.
Yeah.
So he sees this non-infected man and that non-infected guy looks really scary.
Yeah.
And we introduce this idea that there are several components to the infection. There's a physical component and there's a psychological component.
Yeah.
That you like, it's also insanity.
Yeah.
And there's all, the
psychosis,
you know, cardiovascular and all these different components. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Ian being Ray Fiennes' character, Ian being this doctor, he's very curious about like he develops this relationship with Samson because Samson is coming back to him every single day angry. But then he sort of like will sheepishly kind of get close to him to be like, hey, you got any more of those drugs?
He
likes getting high with the doctor. And then like Ian will like, you know, lick a little bit of the edge of a dart and get high with him.
Well, and that was a really big point because that's Dr. Kelson. That's Ray Fiennes saying, cause I think he talks to him. He's like, I'm going to trust you because he knew he was going to pass out. And when it was almost like a test, you know, I mean, Ray Fiennes has been there, you know, 28 years, he's been trying to do all this. So he gets high with him to have that moment, but he is fully ready to die. Like he's fully ready that if Samson comes out of it, he's going to kill me, but it's almost like a test. You know, he's testing his theory that to see if Samson will see him as harmless because he is harmless. Right. So like he takes that, he passes out, he comes to and he's like, he's so surprised. Like, oh my gosh. Like that seems to be the moment for Ray Fiennes' character when he realizes like, I got to do something about this, you know.
Yeah.
Like I got to try and help. I got to try and help Samson.
Yeah, if he can.
Yeah.
But it's also it's such a big swing actually for the fourth film in a franchise like this. And I said this in my spoiler free thoughts too. That like I really appreciate the way that each one of these movies so far, in the 28 something later franchise, has had its own identity, like it's been its own thing. It doesn't feel like they're repeating beats and stuff. No. But we talked a lot about last year when we talked about 28 years later, we talked about the abrupt tone shift in the last 5 minutes of that movie and how it goes from being, because 28 years later is a very emotional movie about it's a coming of age story. It's about a kid sort of leaving home and deciding to head out into the world on his own and coming to terms with the humanity of his parents and you know, there's a lot of heart in that film and there's a lot of emotion in that film. And it's a very, like at one point his mother dies with Dr. Is it Kelston or
Kelson? Yeah.
Kelson. And he gets to put his mother's skull on top of the, you know, the estuary or whatever. Whatever the memento mori, the bone temple,
the ossuary,
bone temple. And it's a very emotional moment. And then the movie has this like really wacky last 5 minutes when the Jimmy gang shows up. And it left a lot of audience members being like, what in the world was that tone shift? But then we keep that tone throughout Nia DaCosta's film of like play and silliness and kind of like humor, like four films in to a zombie franchise. And this is the first movie where we've got this storyline between the doctor and Samson where they're getting high together every day and like dancing to 80s records.
Yeah.
Like, they'll like put on
Duran
records.
Duran.
Yeah. And they'll like, yeah, they'll dance around to Duran Duran music and like literally like dancing with each other, holding hands, like right. him and this giant zombie.
Yeah. You know,
it's like, yeah. And that is a stylistic yeah. swing that is, it's like if, four movies into Jurassic Park, all of a sudden somebody was like finding a way to like turn a dinosaur into like their dog, like their little buddy, yeah. you know, and yeah. like feeding it bones and stuff and like,
yeah.
and playing fetch with it. And it became yeah. like this cute little like domesticated, it's a really big stylistic risk. And I think
yeah.
it works, you know,
I think it does too. And it's interesting because in this genre, for Jurassic World, that's a good comparison, because like if you stray too far from what you've created, it's not going to work that well, right?
Yeah.
Like it's like, you know, if you're trying to domesticate the T-Rex or whatever, that's just not going to be an interesting movie. But this movie being a horror movie, if you do the same scares, it gets old real quick. Like you could make two movies and that's about it. You've got to innovate. And this is also a genre, it being a horror zombie movie, it's one that you can innovate, and it's one that you can start doing stuff that's a little bit different. So I really do, it is a risk, like you're saying, but I appreciate that they're keeping it different. They're keeping it its own film, all of these in its own film. I really do hope that the next one is the last one, though.
Yeah,
I don't know how much more you can go. Like, I really appreciate all these, and I'm sure the next one is going to feel different.
Well,
but I want it to be the end.
I hope they've got a planned way. I hope Alex Garland,
I think he does,
has yeah. a way in mind of like how to pay off where we go at the end of this film
yeah.
with Samson being cured, which is massive. It's a
yeah.
That's something that you rarely see in zombie movies, is like people getting better. And yeah. it's something that, like, again, to introduce that element four films in, 30 years deep into mm-hmm. the zombie apocalypse, to be like, and in this film, it's of all people, it's an alpha who is mm-hmm. going to be cured. And yeah. that's sort of the heart of this film, is the,
yeah.
is the relationship between Samson and Dr. Kelson mm-hmm. is kind of the heart here. And also, like, I think there's something really interesting about so there's a lot in this film about God and the devil yeah. and spirituality uh-huh. and faith. And I think yeah. there's an interesting thing here about, at one point we see, and I'm sort of jumping around here, but we'll go back yeah. to yeah. the story and like what the Jimmies do.
Yeah.
But at one point, while Samson is sort of coming back into a sense of himself, and we see, I really like the way that the word I want to keep coming back to is evolution.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
we're seeing this franchise evolve yeah. and these creatures evolve.
Yeah.
And as Samson is spending more time with the doctor and spending more time subdued, as that aspect of the virus is getting subdued, he's becoming already, like, he'll sort of come out of a stupor and then like decide to put clothes on
yeah.
and be like, oh, like I feel like covering mm-hmm. up my giant floppy wiener.
Yeah,
you know,
a lot of those again in this one, a
lot of those. And, but then he's like, I'm going to put this on, but
yeah.
then he keeps revisiting this train, which was a big set piece in 28 years later. And we see that, and this makes sense, that Samson was a child when the outbreak first happened. And he was on a train with his family. And I thought that sequence was really cool. But I also think that, like, the way of like the innocence of a child being interrupted by the demons of, you know, like the yep. idea of the infected in this film, from Jimmy's perspective, being Satan has unleashed
yeah.
his demons on the earth. He's unleashed yeah. a plague of demons on the earth. And there is, all of the people who are infected with the virus are sort of like trapped in
yeah.
agony. I mean, mm-hmm. their lives are like there's a scene where Ian describes the symptoms of the virus, and he talks about how like it's incredibly painful.
Yeah.
It's physically painful, which is why they're so angry.
Yeah.
And your blood is constantly like your cell growth is constantly like,
yeah,
like really pushing the boundaries of your veins and your, you know, so that's why everyone's eyes are bloodshot and stuff. And then on top of that, there's this psychosis element to it.
Yeah.
But so they're sort of trapped in permanent agony in hell.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, but like, it's like this kid who was thrust into hell, just like everybody else was, he's being delivered by the doctor's medicine from his hell.
Yeah.
While Spike, who was somewhere else, is being taken by a different kind of,
yeah,
you know, like, there's this sort of mirror thing of like this kid being taken into hell while this other kid, Samson, is being led out.
And it's also a very, it's completely that you talked about. And then you have Dr. Kelson and you have Jimmy, who are completely opposite in their worldview, right?
Yeah.
Jimmy is all about every man for himself, and we're going to just survive by killing whoever we need to kill. And there's no hope, you know, and he's given into the evil desires and all that. And there's no real hope for humanity, which in 28 days later, that's what that whole movie is about. Because Jim, played by Cillian Murphy, is all about, we need to help each other, right?
Yeah.
And then, what's her name? The girl in that, the main...
I can't remember her name. Yeah,
I she's awesome though, and I'm so sorry I forgot her name. But she her whole worldview was, no, every man for yourself. And she has the big change. Right. And she believes that, yeah, we should help each other. So it's kind of, they're kind of bringing it full circle in that, because Dr. Kelson is, we need to help each other. Right. We need to. And then the movie ends with seeing Jim, Cillian Murphy, and his daughter, and him helping people. Right.
Yeah.
So this is a surprisingly hopeful end, or it's a surprisingly hopeful shift in direction for the film.
I got hype when I saw it. I got hype.
Oh,
I was like, oh yeah, dude. We'll come back to that.
I
agree. Yeah. And what I also think is interesting here, that I was curious about how you were going to sort of respond to some of the themes here. And this is something that we come up with on this podcast frequently, is like the, you and I approach this from different perspectives, but it's interesting because the scene between Jimmy and Dr. Kelson, which is one of the best scenes, my favorite scenes in the film.
Yeah.
So first of all, we should say that like Jimmy's lore that he teaches to the other Jimmys is that he is the son of Satan.
Yeah.
He calls him Old Nick, which I guess this is a name, an English name for the devil, which I had never heard before.
I was thinking Santa Claus. Like,
that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Like as Old an American. Saint Nick. Old Saint, like Saint Nick, but we say Old Saint Nick sometimes. But he keeps referring to his father as Old Nick.
Old Nick.
And one of the ways that he manipulates the gang of Jimmys is by telling them that he hears the voice of Old Nick in his head, and Old Nick is giving them their commands, their marching orders. But everyone understands Old Nick to be the devil.
Yes.
And even Dr. Kelson, when he says like, are you Old Nick? And he's like, you mean the devil? And
he's like, you're talking about.
Which means like, I guess this must be some nomenclature that is known in the UK. I don't know. I'd never heard that before. You know, I've never Lucifer, Satan, the devil. I've heard these names, but I'd never heard Old Nick before.
Yeah.
But anyway, one of the reasons why the Jimmys sort of revere Saint Jimmy is because he is he says that he is the only begotten son of Satan. So he's sort of he's the inverse of Christ. That's why he has the cross upside down.
Upside down,
you could even say he's the Antichrist. He's the But they also live in a world where it makes sense that like, if someone tells you, Old Nick came and flooded the world with demons, and you live in that world where there are people, you'd be like, well, I mean, there is physical evidence that is backing up the story that he's telling.
Well, and especially with these kids, he's telling them they're all devils. They don't even have a full grasp on religion, or who knows what their grasp on religion right. is. But yeah, that's, it's pretty easy to point to these, you know, they're all demons, and old Nick is, has red skin, and he's the ruler of this world, and I'm his son. It makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, why would do that? One of the Jimmies, you know, is out on a mission that Jimmy sends her on, and she comes across the Bone Temple and sees Dr. Kelson dancing with, you know, with Samson and hanging out with Samson, and that sight of like this red skinned man
covered in iodine,
you know, subduing this alpha in a temple of bones is like, well, obviously that's old Nick. Like clearly that's the devil. And that's, I really like that too, that like it's set up that his body is painted in iodine, so he looks inhuman and you know, all this stuff. But, you know, she brings the gang of Jimmy's there, and Jimmy has to go and talk to him, because Jimmy's like, well, I've just been telling this story to the other Jimmy's, but like, I don't know who this guy is. But they have this scene that's really great. And it's like, it also is just like, Dr. Ian is such a likable character that Jimmy likes him. Even Jimmy's like,
I love that. I love,
you know,
that.
Like, he's just like, oh man, I like talking to you. Like, you know, he's just such a like relatable.
He's like, I hate everybody, and I like talking to you.
I like
that was a great line.
You know, but then also that he's like, hey, you're gonna have to help me out with this, because if you don't, I'm gonna have to cut your guts out and feed them to you.
Feed them to you. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but what's interesting to me about this scene and about the film is, this is a conversation not just between a Satanist and an atheist. It's a conversation between a believer and an atheist.
Yes.
So,
yes.
What I find interesting about Jimmy and his gang is, as the people who believe in the supernatural explanation for the world, that there are gods who are doing their will, exercising their will through some kind of divine order and plan. Jimmy looks at Dr. Kelson and he's like, so you think that the world got like this just because of like science and chance?
Yeah.
And it's very similar to a conversation that that a theist, like that a believer in God, like that a Christian might have with an atheist, where they'd be like, so you think all of this came at just happened to be here? And his point, especially in this world, makes a lot more sense, that he's like, have you looked at the world you live in, my guy? But as a man of science, Dr. Kelson's like, no, I actually like know the origins of the virus. Like, I know like what was going on at the lab where it started at. And like, I know that like humans did this, but it's interesting to me the way that Alex Garland is talking about the sort of the parallels between, because in real life, Satanists, like actual Satanists, like that like are like members of the Satanic Temple and things like that, they're atheists. Like the Satanism is, it's not a real religion. Right. It's a religion that's used as like a political tool to like point out why separation of church and state is important. So like if a state is getting too cozy with a church, the Satanists will show up and be like, well, you got to let us play too, because we're a religion. Yeah. And they're not like a real religion. And if you read the Satanic Charter, it's very like humanistic and kind and charitable. Mm-hmm. It's not like, we like killing people and we, you know, like it's, you know, like, cause they don't actually believe in the literal existence of a devil. And it's believers that believe in the literal existence of the devil. And that's what I found interesting in that conversation, is like, well, Jimmy believes in the God and devil.
Yeah.
And he just chooses to worship the devil, so, because that's the world. His formative experience as a child was watching his priest father, you know, be torn apart by demons, you know, in a church, which like, of course he's going to think.
Well, and then he starts leading them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's such an interesting, you know,
I'm curious about like what you're.
Yeah. I thought that was really interesting too, because it's like, if you believe in the devil, if like Jimmy does, then you have to believe in a God, right? Mm-hmm. There's opposition in everything. So if you believe in one, you have to believe in the other. And I did think it was interesting. And I thought that it's a completely different take on everything that we've seen before. Just like you talked about, like it's coming from a Satan side of it.
Yeah.
Where the atheist is in the middle, right? And I thought Alex Garland did a really good job of not saying, of presenting these things as the character's beliefs and not presenting anything as like, well, this is how everything is. You know, like a bad Christian movie.
Sure.
Will tell you exactly how you're supposed to think.
Uh-huh.
You know? And this was a movie that was just presenting these themes and these ideas in this very interesting way. So I the whole time I was very intrigued, and I just kept thinking, like, man, and I've looked up Alex Garland a little bit, and he doesn't, I don't know if he's an atheist. I don't know. I mean, do you know?
I know that he's a determinist. I know that he's okay. A person who believes that the universe is deterministic and that.
Right. Yeah. And he does a very good job of keeping things, you know, not creating like, well, this is wrong or this is it or this isn't it. You know, he's just kind of like exploring these themes. So I thought he did a great job of coming that at that angle in a very interesting way.
Well, think about the fact that like, Dr. Kelsen at one point while he's high on drugs with Samson says to him, man, if I could just hear you say one word, that would be a miracle. Right. And he says the word miracle as an atheist, thinking that it never will happen because he, again, he's lived in this world for 30 years.
Yeah.
And that's another, man, I love the, in that scene with him and Jimmy where Jimmy's like, he's like, well, I was quite young when everything fell apart. He's like, but you're old enough that you must, he's like, certainly you remember what it was like before. And he's like, well, some things I remember. He's like, but like, he's like, not the like finer details. He's like, I remember like the feeling of like certainty and secure. I thought that was really, really interesting. Him trying to like work, because it's 30 years is a long time.
Yeah.
So it is like the idea of witnessing one of the infected make any kind of progress.
Yeah.
Would be like a miracle for him. Mm-hmm. And there is a scene where he realizes he's running out of morphine. He's only got about 2 weeks left.
Especially with Samson, how much he consumes. Yeah, yeah.
And he wants to offer Samson the kindness of putting him in the ossuary and, you know, killing him and putting his bones in the bone temple. And as he's about to, like, kill Samson, Samson looks up at the moon and says the word moon.
Yeah.
And, you know, he stops. And it's like, and realize, I mean, it's almost like, it's like King Kong, you know, when like King Kong gets tamed by the
beauty.
Know?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I do feel like to a certain degree at the end of Dr. Kelsen's life, he's witnessing sort of miraculous events happening, you know, even though you could explain them with science that he's using his knowledge of medicine to bring about these events, but he uses the word miracle.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's really interesting. It's very interesting. And it is funny because, you know, he's an atheist. It's funny how science and religion like to argue about things when in reality, they're more similar than I think people want to admit, because like faith is not technically a religious word.
Yeah.
The meaning of faith is believing in something you can't prove, which you need to have faith to believe in God, but you also need to have faith to not believe in God. Like and faith is used so much more as a religious term, but the actual definition of it is believing in something you can't prove, which is what science is all about. Right. Yeah. And so like, It's interesting that he talks about miraculous things being miraculous. Like it is, it can be a miracle. You can explain a miracle. It doesn't have to have not an explanation, right? But he's seeing these things. So it's, I find it also very, very interesting.
Yeah. You can have faith in a hypothesis, and we definitely see Dr. Kelsen acting in many ways in this movie where he's like, I've got a feeling, I've got a hunch, and I'm gonna, you know, I've got a hunch that like, if I lie down next to you, you're not going to hurt me. And if you do, oh, well, I think he's sort of like, oh, well,
he is. Like, yeah, he's whatever. Like, give it like, all right, I had a good run. Kinda,
you know, whatever. But he's moving in a direction of, he doesn't know that Samson's not going to rip his head off the second he comes out of the drug stupor. Mm-hmm. He just has faith. Then at one point in the film, he decides to use antipsychotics because it occurs to him there's more, the morphine is helping to calm the rage aspect, the physical, the pain that an infected person feels. But he's like, there's got to be another component to it. And he's like, I think that you're seeing the world in a different way. And so he starts giving him antipsychotics and starts giving him pills. And that's that combined with the sedative is the thing that ultimately breaks the fever for Samson. But, you know, and there's this really interesting thing where now Samson sort of like lives in both worlds because he takes on a whole horde of infected.
Yeah.
And he doesn't get reinfected because he's already,
he gets blood all over his face.
Yeah.
And then he gets bit.
Yeah,
like his whole is like shoulder. They bite off part of his shoulder, but he kills all of them.
Yeah,
I mean he's still this huge.
Yeah,
guy. He's still an alpha basically. So, yeah. I thought that was his story is. I think I found this whole movie was very interesting, but I found it very very interesting, and it was a very good way to cut that they pulled it off, you know. And then the other thing that I thought was awesome, I loved the conversation between Jimmy and Dr. Kelson. And then after that, does he talk to, I think he talks to Samson again. Cause he tells him, he's like, listen, I had a moment where I was genuinely scared for my life, which is when he's talking to Jimmy. Right. And he's not scared of the infected. He's scared of the human.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And he's like, I've got to do this. I've got to put on this front to save my life so that I can continue to try and save you.
Yeah.
Essentially, which I thought was awesome as well. Just a great part of the story.
Oh, the performance.
Yeah. Which we didn't really talk about this because we skipped over the part that Jimmy's go to this house.
We skipped over the barn, which is probably the most upsetting scene. This sequence is why I say this movie is the most brutal of any of the four, because this sequence is bad. But again, there are religious allusions here, like Inquisition and torture of like non-believers and things like that. But yeah, the Jimmies go to this, they find a little small community of people. It's like five people that are all living together in this little community, and there probably used to be more, and they've been whittled down over the years. And you know, the Jimmies just kind of like toy with these people and mess with them and take their food, and it just seems like this is sort of their way, is they rove around and look for their scavengers, you know. But they offer to do to these, or they're gonna do to these people what Jimmy calls charity.
Not charitable at all.
And just like as soon as he said like the removal of the shirt, I was like, is that what I think it is? And it was.
Well, and we got foreshadowed in the last movie where a guy has Jimmy carved into his torso, right?
Yeah.
And that's who Spike has to kill. So.
Yeah. Yep. And so what it is they hang these people up in a barn and they basically flay their skin off of them, kind of in the shape of like a t-shirt. And again, like Nia DaCosta's showing a lot of this, and like, and it is
brutal. It wasn't good.
And there's something different about watching an infected monster like tear into someone versus a human being tearing into someone in this way.
Because
the human being should know better, should be able to feel some kind of, should be able to like, you know, and like even one of the Jimmies that's not Spike like throws up while they're doing this because it's so it's so intense. But Spike can't do it, and eventually, you know, main Jimmy, Saint Jimmy, allows Spike to. He's like, "Get out of here! You know, go. You're ruining this."
Yeah. And then the other Jimmy Inc. She comes in and she has compassion on Spike. Like she has.
Yeah.
She also doesn't really completely believe in Jimmy Crystal. She thinks he's lying. Which he is, but you know, so she stays with him, but yeah, they go through all this stuff. And then one of them, I guess this is Andy Serkis's son.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
One of the Jimmies is, or the guy that,
no, Tom.
The guy that fights the,
He says you can fight one of the Jimmies and you can live, which makes you think, it made me think, okay, so this is probably how he got some of these other Jimmies.
Yeah.
You know, like he killed some of their families. And then he said, if you kill one of the Jimmies, you can live.
It's like, this is a terrible way to grow your ranks, because if you have to lose a Jimmy to gain a Jimmy, but his idea is I want strong fingers. He calls them his fingers.
Yeah, his fingers.
And he's like, and in order for my fingers to be strong, I need to test them from time to time. So if you're stronger than one of my fingers, you should be one of my Jimmies, you know?
Yeah.
And, But again, it's like, then you're gonna have to go through all the work of brainwashing a whole new person when you've already got a perfectly brainwashed Jimmy already. And this guy fights one of the Jimmies. He's getting, then this is another like just brutal fight. Yeah. Just gnarly. And
he picks a girl. The girl is like frail and she's kind of looking like she doesn't want to fight, but she did that on purpose.
Yeah,
because she's the craziest of all the Jimmies.
She's the one that earlier they were having dinner and she's doing like the dipsy Teletubby dance. It's like, you know, which I guess he must have just taught her because, again, none of these kids could have ever seen the Teletummies. You know, but yeah, it's this whole section is it's like what makes the movie one of the most terrifying and violent and brutal and hard to watch films in the franchise. And again, what makes it so impressive that Nia DaCosta is still able to make this film fun and like entertaining and funny when it's got a sequence like this in it that is so brutal.
Well, and like, so the wife of Tom, I'm guessing she's watching everything and she throws like a, what is, she throws a hook to like pull, you know,
like a big swinging hook
it kills the other Jimmy. It goes to the back of her head and she dies, and then Tom is able to light a propane tank and sets the whole thing on fire, makes Jimmy Crystal really mad,
kills another Jimmy, lights another Jimmy on fire.
There's only four of them left, right?
Yeah, I think we're down three Jimmies.
And so like he's all mad, which we have talked about this, but not as much directly. But Jack,
I think we're down two Jimmies at this point, because then another one dies in the woods later.
Yes, that's
and then
right.
We only have four when we do the.
So we got down to two.
Yeah, Jack O'Connell is.
Jack O'Connell, he's like, two films within a year of each other of just like amazing performances for these bad guys, and he does an awesome job in this as well.
I hope more films will let Jack O'Connell play something other than just a villain, because his most iconic roles in his career so far are primarily villain roles. Like he started off with a movie called Wolf Creek that is, at least I think that's what it's called, Wolf Creek, with Michael Fassbender. That's also another just absolutely brutal watch. And he did that as quite a young actor, but he's great in that movie and terrifying in that movie. And he sort of built a career on being like a very good, terrifying, off-putting character. But when you see an actor like that who gets those opportunities over and over again, like Christoph Waltz, it's like, boy, he makes a great villain in Inglourious Basterds. But then it's like, I love that we get to see him as the good guy in Django. Like I like that we get to see more dimensionality from him. And I would like to, I hope Jack O'Connell gets more opportunities, because he's just a good actor. That's why he's good at playing. Like if Ralph Fiennes can be Voldemort and Dr. Kelsen, you know,
he can do it. So he does an awesome job, but that's what gets them to Dr. Kelsen, because Jimmy Inc is like, oh, I saw your father. I saw old Nick. Like we can go ask him if we should kill Spike. Cause Spike, Jimmy's about to kill him. And anyway, that's what gets them there. So they go and they have Jimmy and Dr. Kelsen have the conversation, and then it's time for the performance now. So which I love that Dr. Kelsen's like, let's turn this up to 11.
Yeah. You know?
And it's like
Spinal Tap reference.
Yep. It was great. And he's like,
and this is like the trailer, like when you watch the trailer and you're like, what is gonna happen in this movie that makes Ralph Fiennes like put on face paint and do this crazy, and it's like, weird. Oh, he's got to pretend to be the devil.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but my theater like erupted into applause when this was done.
Oh, they did.
Yeah. Nice. This sequence finished and my entire theater started clapping. And I was like, I love going to the movies in LA because people do stuff like that.
Yeah.
And like, it is awesome. It's an awesome sequence.
It was great. I mean, he's got fire all around and he's like, he starts playing Iron Maiden and like, you know, the sign of the devil or whatever it is.
666.
And he's like, he's dancing around. He blows stuff in their face, which I thought was some sort of
hallucinogenic. Some sort of
like, cause they're
psychotropic.
Like, they're tripping out and they start dancing and Jimmy's dancing. I love also that you can tell that Jimmy's loving it.
Oh yeah.
Jimmy knows what's going on, obviously, because he told him to do it.
Yeah.
And he just comes in and he's like, oh, this is perfect. Like, yeah, this is exactly what I wanted. And the way that they all play against each other. And then we know that Spike knows it's not the devil. Like,
well, and like seeing Jimmy Inc. like also realize, like, oh my gosh, I think this really is old, you know, like the Jimmys, yeah, that like doubted if it really was old Nick are,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
like they're completely,
oh, they're
mesmerized, yeah, by like we are really in the presence of the devil here, you know. Yeah. But I also love, I love what Garland is doing here with being like, through a certain lens, Dr. Kelsen is very scary looking, this man who has red, oh, skin, yeah, who lives inside, yeah, of a bone temple, but then, well, when you get to know him, he's like this very sensitive, kind, yeah, man.
Spike's dad, right, in the first one was terrified, yeah, of Dr. Kelsen.
Yeah.
So yeah, 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 yeah.
And he, I is, like that like,
yeah,
that it's like the you know, the appearances can be deceiving thing, mm-hmm, the dichotomy of obviously, yeah, Samson, and yeah,
yeah, because I mean, originally from the trailers of 28 years later, I thought Dr. Kelsen was crazy and was going to be the antagonist, and I think they tried to set him up that way. And he was great. I mean, he's a very, very likable character.
Yeah.
And I love this whole thing that he does. And then, like, I also loved how, because he does this whole performance and then he's like, all right, and he disappears, right? And then, yeah, he's got the flames and everybody's like mesmerized. And then he's like, all right, come here, my son. And he says the things that Jimmy wants him to say, which is like, oh, I should expand my fist and I should have from seven to hundreds and to thousands. And, you know, he's saying all these things and then
be more brutal. And then,
yeah, yeah, yeah. And you can tell Dr. Kelsen's not okay with what he's saying, but it's either his life or, you know,
yeah,
or do what he wants. And then I love how Dr. Kelsen turns the tables.
Well, he recognizes Spike's eyes, yep, which also, did you catch like what these masks were?
They look like skeleton things, but they kind of...
Like what they were made out of, though?
Oh, no.
I'm pretty sure that they're shoes that are, like, opened up.
Oh, really?
So it's like the tongue of a shoe that goes right down the middle of the face.
Okay.
And then, like, it's stretched over the face with cut out eye holes. And, yeah, like, which I thought that was, like, a cool little thing.
The, yeah, yeah.
These masks that the Jimmys wear.
Yeah, I like
which
that,
which are also terrifying, and they wear the masks while they're doing charity and while they're cutting, yeah, people's skin off. It's very, yeah, scary. It's
very gross. And
yeah,
yeah. Yeah, he recognizes and he goes over and he's like, Spike. And this is when he turns the tables on him, because Jimmy's stuck and Jimmy's a kid. Again, Jimmy's a kid.
Mm.
So he doesn't realize like the implications of what's going on. And he turns the tables on him by saying, you know, oh, you know that Christ is real. Well, Christ was the Son of God and he was crucified. So you need to be crucified. And Jimmy's pissed. He's like, you can tell he's really, really bad.
Which again, they do a good job with like the balancing of the humor here. Cause he's, yeah, like, he's like, wait, I have one more commandment, you know? And Jimmy's like, no, I thought it was just the three.
Yeah.
he's like,
that's all. That's it.
Pretty sure just the three. Yeah.
And, yep. And then, yeah, he's like, yeah, he's like, no, so you need to be crucified. And Jimmy Inc. is like, yeah, she's like all for it. Right. Uh-huh. And, but then he's like, no, this is not like, this isn't even the devil, which loses him all credibility,
right,
for his followers, because like it's all a ruse. Like, and again, a child wouldn't really understand that like,
yeah,
crap, I gotta go through with this or nobody's gonna believe me. He just kind of like, no, you lied because I lied. Anyway,
yeah,
I thought it was a really brilliant way to do that.
I wish Dr. Kelsen didn't have to die.
I agree, and I also am a little, this is kind of probably my biggest criticism, is that this whole sequence didn't feel as big as I felt like it could have been.
Yeah.
It's just like, cause he's like, no, you know, you need to be crucified. And then, all Jimmy does is just takes a knife and stabs Dr. Kelsen. And then Jimmy Inc. stabs Jimmy. And it kind of played out. It's not bad. It wasn't,
it's just kind of small.
It is.
Yeah.
And I just kind of wanted Jimmy to be pushed a little bit further in this moment, and also a little bit more in the film. Like, he does horrible things and he has his followers do horrible things, but all he does in the movie is stab Kelsen with a knife.
Yeah. I mean, I am glad that he got I'm glad that he does wind up getting crucified upside down.
Yes.
Like I'm glad.
Yes,
I'm like, good, good.
Yeah. That's, yeah. That's what I totally agree, but I kind of wanted him to, I wanted to see him be a little bit crazier. And I'm fine with it because he's a cult leader. And this is what cult leaders do, is they have other people do horrible things for them. Just like, Manson, you know,
yeah.
he didn't do anything. He had other people do it for him.
Yeah.
But I kind of wanted Jimmy to be a little bit more menacing and do something that was a little bit further, but you know, I digress. It's not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah. It's kind of like, if Dr. Kelsen's going to die, I wish Jimmy would like get him a little bit better rather than just like one stab, which is like, oh, you're gonna get, it's like if he it like
was, yeah
did, I mean, it's not that I think the movie needs more gore, but if it was like something a little more
like menacing,
I don't know,
even if like, he played with him a little bit and was doing these, I don't know, just something to kind of make Jimmy a little bit more physically scary with whatever he's doing, you know. And I agree, like, man, it's gonna be a lot more gore, but it just felt like it would be, I would have liked that maybe a little bit more for his character, but he doesn't. Everything kind of goes down and they kill the other two Jimmys, and then they do crucify Jimmy upside down.
Yeah.
And he says the same thing that Christ says on the cross, which is, Father, why have you forsaken me?
Which makes sense.
It does.
He feels like he was the chosen son of the devil. And it's like, what's this?
Yeah. 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 Like it's a very interesting
he
way.
He sees Samson coming in. Yes. He thinks Samson is the devil, which I also really like that the imagery that they're playing with there.
He's got horns on him because that's what he's seeing. Yeah. Uh-huh. And he does also he has a wound in his side, which again, Christ had that as well.
Yeah. So I also, there's a few things that I thought the screenplay could have done that would have helped me out. One is Olivia made this suggestion and I was like, oh, that would have been actually a really cool parallel that I think Garland maybe missed.
Yeah.
But who knows, maybe this comes up in the third one, but it can't because they're both dead now. But in the conversation between Kelsen and Jimmy, when Jimmy says, well, he's like, I hear him in my head all the time.
Yeah.
She's like, I kind of wish that he would have been like, would you like to not hear him? Because he's already working on helping Samson with his psychosis.
I thought the same thing. Yeah.
And I think that it'd be totally fine if Jimmy rejects the help, but it's like, if Dr. Kelsen is equally as invested as in like helping Jimmy as he is in helping Samson, that it's like, they're both monsters. They're just different kinds of monsters. And he's a doctor. And if he can help one, he certainly can help the other. And maybe he succeeds with Samson, but he fails with Jimmy. And I think that could have been a really interesting thing, is that he's like trying to help both.
Yeah.
But it just seems like instead they went with the route of like, he just finds Jimmy terrifying. And maybe that's better for like, to just, you know,
I totally agree. I thought that too. Like, oh, well, he's psychotic as well. He's either schizophrenic or something. He has something wrong.
Of course he is, though. Like,
obviously. Yeah. And it's like, so I thought that as well. Like, oh, maybe he should help him. I really am a little disappointed because I do want to see Jimmy and Jim on opposite sides. Like, I want to see, and there is a theory online that I've seen that people are like, well, Jimmy's not dead. We didn't really see him die, so he could still be alive, or he could come back as infected. But I think I really do kind of wish that Jimmy would have lived, and he would have been the third one to be, because I see Jim as the, even though Dr. Kelsen is the opposite of Jimmy, I see Jim as the opposite as well.
Yeah.
And I think they still could have probably killed Dr. Kelsen, but had Jimmy still be alive. Anyway, it's either way, I'm interested to see what they do.
Well, and again, like, so, and then right at the end here, like, my only other gripe for me is that Samson shows up as Jimmy is upside down on the cross and crucified, and Jimmy sees him as the devil, and Samson is like, he's almost like all the way back. Like, he looks at Dr. Kelsen and he says, like, thank you for helping me.
Yeah.
And he just says it like a normal person.
Yeah.
But my issue is, and I'm this is the thing that I'm like, I hope Garland has an answer for this in the third film, and I'm sure it's already mapped out, but I just go like, okay, but if Dr. Kelsen's dead, it's not like Samson's going to be able to figure out like what medicine he needs to keep taking and what the dosage is. Right. Like, we've been able to heal one person, but how do we scale that out? How does that extrapolate out into like healing the world and healing the infection? And is the plan for the franchise that like eventually they figure that out or not? Is it just, was it just this one movie where it's just showing like this one story in this franchise was about the last act of this doctor was to heal one of the infected. But to me, it seems like all for nothing if it's not going to, if it's not going to mean something bigger for the world. And I almost just wish there had been like one extra thing of Ralph Fiennes being able to say to Samson as he's dying, like, this is what I gave you. This is the dosage, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, this is where you can find more, and like, tell him, like, you know, and then I don't know.
Yeah. He could have written it down. I think he did, right? He was writing things.
Maybe there's that. Yeah.
And so maybe they do have to, maybe in the third one, they're going to have to go back and kind of find his writings, because I think if anything, it's going to end on like more people getting cured, but they're not going to show it could just be hinting at that. But yeah, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see where it goes. Like, the third one has already been approved, so they are making it. I think Alex Garland has already written it, so I'm interested to see where it goes. I do again wish that Jimmy was going to be in it, but the end of this movie, we see Jim Killian Murphy from the first movie, and he's with his daughter, and he's giving her a test, and then, you know, they see Jimmy Inc, who I can't remember her character's name. It's like Lily or something.
And Spike,
and they're running away, and they're like, the daughter's like, should we help him? And he's like, yeah, of course. And then it ends. So it's like,
but also, and this is the thing that I missed in 28 years later, it was one of the only things, like, the movie ended and I was like, huh, they didn't have the music. I was like, the music's so iconic. Yeah. And as soon as Killian Murphy shows back up, the music starts playing. And I was like, oh yeah.
And I then heard that
too. They bring in the soundtrack from the first two films. And I sat in the theater as the credits rolled and listened to the entire track. And it was, it was awesome. Like, that thing goes so hard.
Yeah.
I was like, oh yeah. Yeah. And that got me going, like, okay, yeah, we got to finish it. We got to, let's make the third one and let's finish it out strong. And I agree with you. Let's make that the end.
Yeah.
Let's call it there.
Let's be done. It'll be a great four or what is
five.
It? Five movies. Yeah.
Cause you're four for four right now. So go five for five and just let it be like a fantastic series.
Yep. And just be done. You don't need to do anything else. You don't need to remake it with someone else. Just kind of have it be its own self-contained five movies.
Yeah. Okay, that's it. We're gonna get into our scores here. We give scores out of 10, 10 being the best for the technical achievement in the film. That's just the craft, you know, cinematography, acting, music, all that good stuff. Practical effects, there are a lot of practical effects in this film. We give a score for the ending. How well did the film stick the landing? We give a score for rewatchability. We give a score for cultural impact and significance. And we give a score for our subjective thoughts on the film. So, Kramer, your technical rating for The Bone Temple.
My technical rating is an 8. I thought this, I mean, everybody's doing a really, really good job. And this is the first film that used all fully cinematic cameras. So, like, they didn't use iPhones, they didn't use DV cams. In 28 weeks later, they had a few sequences shot on film, but most of the movie was shot like on a DV cam as well. And I thought Nia DaCosta pulled it off. Like, it looks beautiful and it fits with the other films still, which I thought was pretty awesome. But the acting, the directing, the writing is all pretty much top form. I think I'm taking off points because of the things that we just talked about with Jimmy and kind of the ending feeling a little bit, maybe a little bit rushed and a little bit not as big as it seemed like it was going for. Like, 28 years later, I understand why it was an intimate ending and it fit for that movie. But this one, I think, needed to be a little bit more grand.
Yeah, I gave it a 9. Technically, I'm really impressed with the way that Garland has managed to expand and evolve this world. I feel like everything that needs to hit, like every time Nia DaCosta wants something to hit with a specific emotion in this film, she gets it.
Yeah.
Whether she wants you to squirm or feel horrified or scared or laugh or feel, you know, kind of emotionally wrapped up in something, or, you know, or whether the screenplay wants you to be thinking philosophically about the ideas that it's talking about. I feel like you're always with them, and the performances across the board are really, really solid. And I just really enjoyed this movie. How about the ending? Yeah.
I gave it an 8. Loved the last performance by Ralph Fiennes, but as we just said, probably could have been a little bit better, but I'm super excited for the next one.
Yeah. My, like I said, my theater got hyped at the performance sequence. Yeah. Sure. Maybe like the last fight could have been a little bigger, or maybe I wanted Ralph Fiennes' character to have like a more epic send off, but I gave it a 9 because of the Cillian Murphy sequence. It just left me feeling really ready for another one. Just was like, bring it on, bring on another one. How about rewatchability?
I put as a 7 because it's brutal. It's hard to watch. It's gonna be hard to watch some of these, but I like how it all plays out. There's so much in there that I do want to rewatch. So
yeah, this is my lowest score. It's a 7 as well, just because this is a franchise that for me isn't like I'm not a huge zombie movie guy as it is. And so when I'm thinking about movies that I want to revisit and come back to, like, they're not top of mind for me. But I think when all is said and done, like, this is going to be one of the greatest, if not the greatest, zombie movie franchise ever made, because they don't really get much better than this. So, but it's just from my personal taste, it's not like like you said, it's kind of brutal and not like, you know, but, how about cultural impact and relevance?
Cultural impact and relevance, I'm giving a 7.5. I think people are really liking this one. There's not a huge tone shift, which turned off some people, but, I think it's gonna, like you said, it's 4 for 4. So I think it's going to be influential for sure on a lot of films moving forward. So, but it's hard to tell, you know, but I think it's a good enough score.
I gave it a 7.5 as well, because I think it just, it continues to be impressive, the life that they've been able to keep in this thing. And I also think, like, it's always good to have like solid January releases. I think like the last few years we've had like at least one solid horror movie in January. Like, January has become a good slot for like solid horror flicks, January and February. Or, you know, early in the year, where like not everything has to be terrible and disposable. And these two are great. How about subjective?
My subjective score is a 7.5. I think it's really well made. Nia DaCosta did a great job picking this franchise, or keeping it going as it has been. And I think, it's really brutal, hard to watch at times, but that was the point. And it makes me super excited for the next one.
Yeah, I gave it an 8. I do, you know, going back to like the rewatchability thing, I'm like, if today I were asked like, which one in this franchise do you want to watch the most right now? It's like, I'd probably go to like either the first one or this one top of mind. 'Cause I just thought this one was so much like fun. It's such a weird word to use. Because it's such a brutal movie, but it's like, it is maybe the most fun they've ever had in one of these movies with the tone and with the, you know, that as disturbing and terrifying as the Jimmys are, they're undeniably entertaining. Especially Jack O'Connell and the relationship between Kelson and Samson is kind of something special. So, yeah. Okay. Those are our thoughts. What'd you think of the movie? Let us know in the comments. Like, share, comment, subscribe. Subscribe to the channel if you're not subscribed already. Yeah. Tell your friends about the channel. Yeah. Share it to your Instagram stories and go, I like this podcast. You should be following this podcast. Okay. Next week, we are stepping back in time. Okay. Join us on this journey, this nostalgic journey into the past. Today, the teaser trailer for Masters of the Universe, which comes out later this year, dropped on YouTube. So you can go watch the teaser trailer. But Kramer and I grew up watching the 1987 Masters of the Universe with Dolph Lundgren and Courtney Cox and Frank Langella. And we are going to watch that movie. We're going to watch that one so that we can sort of prime ourselves for the Jared Leto helmed one later this year.
Who is he in
that Skeletor.
One? Oh, he's Skeletor?
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
we're going to see how we grew up. I mean, we both of us probably watched Masters of the Universe 1987 at least 20 times as kids.
Oh, yeah. It was always on TV.
Yeah, I owned it on VHS, and and so it'll be interesting to see whether or not we think it holds up. I feel my guess is that there are elements here that are still great, like Frank Langella's performance and costume design and production design. Like, I remember there are things about it that are like solid, but it'll be go back and be like, does this screenplay hold up? Do the performance, do the action sequences hold up? But maybe we'll be pleasantly surprised. So watch along with us, Masters of the Universe, He-Man, I Have the Power.
I Have the Power.
That's what we're watching. Yeah. We're going to journey to Eternia, and we'll see you next week on the show.
Bye-bye.